From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in a report card, and Governor Kathy Hochul just got a rough one. It comes from an organization called Climate Can't Wait, which is a collaborative of a number of groups focused on climate action. They looked at 14 different subjects, and the highest grade that Governor Hochul got in any one of them was a C. Overall, the organization is ready to flunk the governor on dealing with climate change. Here's part of what they write. Quote, at almost every opportunity, the governor has refused to take action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, transition to new renewable energy projects built by union labor, phase out the use of dangerous fracked gas, and address racial and class inequities. Governor Hochul's climate grade for 2024 is a failing D-minus. As the climate crisis worsens, threatening communities in New York and around the world, we need a climate leader. Instead, Governor Hochul has ignored the most fundamental needs of New Yorkers and sided with fossil fuel interests and corporate utilities. End quote. The governor has largely ignored the report card from what I can tell. She has spoken often of the need for urgent climate action. She has said she is proud of New York's work on this issue. So why do climate action groups give her such poor marks? Let's find out with our guests this hour. Representing Climate Can't Wait, Mark Dunley is back with us. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you, Evan. Always glad to be here with your audience in Rochester.
And Mark, why don't you tell the audience a little bit more about your own background?
Well, I was one of the co-founders of the New York Public Interest Group when I was a student at RPI back in the early 70s. For most of my career, I did anti-poverty work, particularly as the executive director of the Hunger Action Network for almost 30 years. But about 10 years ago, after Hurricane Sandy, and I was living down in Brooklyn at that point, I just felt that our response to climate change and extreme weather was not adequate to actually prevent climate collapse. And so I switched to work full time on climate issues.
Great having you back here, Mark. And Susan Hugh Smith is a Monroe County legislator who is with us in studio. Do you want to mention a little bit of your own resume as well here?
Sure, if that's helpful. I've been a educator for over 20 years, primarily on environmental issues, taught a couple local colleges, environmental studies and environmental health, and been an activist in the community that's led to the formation of a not-for-profit for climate solutions and a small business focused on implementing renewable energy community-wide.
Now, in government, you work at the local level, but of course you care about the state and federal work on climate.
Correct.
Is a failing D minus a fair grade to you, Susan?
I mean, yeah, but to be fair, I think there are probably no political leaders who would get much better than that. I mean, we have globally a huge, what we call the emissions gap, the space between what countries have pledged to do and you can states, communities, what they've pledged to and what we're actually accomplishing. There's a huge space between those. And the future depends on our actions today, and our actions are not living up to the need that a stable future demands.
All right, Mark. So first of all, D minus is not actually failing, I don't think. You give her a failing D minus, but that's not an F. I mean, maybe she would defend herself and say D minus is still passing.
Well, you know, we still have, you know, some hope, and there have been some things, you know, that, you know, she has done. You know, she did support last year the proposal to move to require new buildings in New York State to be basically electrified, or at least, you know, not using fossil fuel, the Oil Electric Buildings Act. She pushed for a shorter timeline than what her own Climate Action Council had recommended. And this year's budget, she did propose part of the what's known as the New York HEAT Act, which is probably the biggest priority for a lot of climate groups, would make sure that state agencies, starting with the Public Service Commission, actually aligned their own actions with this climate law, the CLCPA that was passed 5 years ago. Unfortunately, she did not include the funding to ensure that low-income households did not pay more than 6% of their income for utility bills, and then the bill did not pass the state legislature, particularly because opposition on the state assembly side, or lack of interest by the leadership, I should say. I think many of the actual assembly members were supportive of that. So she has done some good things, but she's also at many points, you know, backed off. She really unleashed a firestorm last year when she began to realize that by putting a price on carbon, which is something that her administration has proposed, that it would, you know, result in fossil fuels being more expensive, which people would say, duh, that's the whole idea about carbon pricing, is to, you know, shift away from fossil fuels by making those who use fossil fuel pay the actual price. You know, that was sort of beaten back last year, her effort to gut, you know, that particular provision. But she's continued to move away from climate change. People were stunned, including state and federal Democrats, when at the last moment in this year's budget negotiations, literally with 3 days to go, she decided to pause congestion pricing in New York City, even though the city had spent close to $500 million to implement what the infrastructure needed to implement this in a couple of weeks after she paused it. So she's begun to sort of back away from climate change and has refused to take a lot of really important steps. And as Sue pointed out, you know, the United Nations is very clear. We are out of time. That last year worldwide, climate warming, global warming went above the 1.5 degrees Celsius benchmark that we set in Paris. That doesn't mean it's permanently above 1.5 degrees, but that was very frightening. And the UN Secretary General has repeatedly said, you know, the lack of action by politicians have literally opened up the gates of hell. It's code red for the planet, and we have to act now. And we were hoping when Governor Hochul went to see Pope Francis over in Italy that he would have publicly chided her a little bit about her treat. Hopefully he said that to her in private.
Let me read the 14 different individual grading categories here for listeners. And we're going to post this entire report card from Climate Can't Wait for Governor Hochul. Again, she's getting an overall D- on climate. We're going to post it in the show notes for this particular program when it is posted later today. All right, greenhouse gas emissions reductions, she gets a D. Renewable energy targets, C-. Equity and state agency mandates, D. Funding the transition to renewables, F. Implementing the scoping plan, D. The New York Heat Act, D. Climate Change Superfund Act, D. Congestion pricing, F. The Just Energy Transition Act, F. The Build Public Renewables Act, a C. Building Decarbonization and Thermal Energy Networks, C-. The Stop Climate Polluters Handouts Act, she gets an F. The Trees Act, an F. Packaging Reduction and Recycling Act, a D. Okay, a lot there. And I want to work through the individual grades and categories there. I think I said C- was the best she got. So she did get a C. Might have gotten one C there. But let me start with Susan Hughes Smith, who's with us in studio. On the New York Heat Act, for people who want to understand it better here, and I think she got an F on that one. Let me think here. D or an F. Okay. Tell people again, what is the New York Heat Act? I'll find it here. Mm-hmm. What is the New York Heat Act? Why does it matter here? Why is this one so important, Sue?
Yeah, you got it. So the New York Heat Act would essentially align utility law with the climate law. Right now, utilities, if you call and you say, I want gas service, the utilities have to serve gas. But really, most people just want heat. And what we need is an alignment of the utility law so that we're not expanding the infrastructure for the highly polluting, very potent greenhouse gas, fossil gas, and instead we get utility aligned with our goals so that we can begin dismantling the gas infrastructure, not continuing to expand the gas infrastructure. And at the same time, protect low-income New Yorkers by capping utility costs at 6% of household income. So for middle and upper class New Yorkers, utility bills typically are 2-3% of your annual income. But for low-income New Yorkers, even though they're paying much less dollar-wise, it represents a larger portion of their income. So finding a way to protect people, particularly as we make that transition, is absolutely essential.
Yeah, I mean, reading on the report card, she got a D on the New York HEAT Act. And Climate Can't Wait writes, Governor Hochul incorporated only parts of this bill in her budget proposal and did not prioritize passing the bill at the end of session. So I don't want to ask you to get in the governor's head, but does a series of actions like this from the governor betray her priorities in your mind? I mean, do you think that, you know, actions speak louder than words here? I mean, how do you feel about this?
I mean, I always think actions speak louder than words. You know, we've had a lot of people say a lot of nice words, which isn't
about
solving
climate.
The climate crisis,
yeah.
Right? So absolutely. I think it's particularly problematic. You know, the governor's from Buffalo. National Fuel is from Buffalo, and we don't really actually have a lot of fossil fuel workers in our state, but those that we do have are from that region. And unfortunately, it seems that she's caving to the political pressure from certain interest groups rather than, protecting the everyday New Yorkers who she said that climate is a huge problem. Well, then she needs to step up and make sure that we're aligning our systems so that we start dismantling systems in a thoughtful way, and not some kind of hodgepodge, you know, just a mix of things.
Well, let me follow this point with you, and then I'll ask Mark about this. You raised the point that the governor, being from Buffalo, is from one of the only parts of the state that does have this direct connection to the fossil fuel industry right now. And one of the things that I have heard for a long time from even sort of, I don't want to put folks on a political paradigm, but maybe center left or those who want to see an energy transition but are worried. For example, in West Virginia, where I used to work, worried about what happens if the coal industry comes to a halt. Mm-hmm. What happens to all those workers and their families? Is there a way to transition for them? And maybe the governor would say, you know, hey, I have to be worried about those constituents, too. Mm-hmm. Right now, we don't have a plan for transitioning their careers, and we have to do better for them. I'm surmising here, and it's not fair to the governor. Mm-hmm. I'm not speaking for the governor. I'm just surmising. But what would you make of that?
Well, for sure, and I wouldn't speak for the governor either. But, you know, of course we have to transition workers, and that's always a challenge. But to act as if for example, in West Virginia, as if the coal industry is protecting the coal miners' jobs, this was always factually not true. We have many fewer coal miners today. They increased output by, you know, technological advancements that, you know, caused them to need fewer workers.
They cut corners on safety. Workers would die. I mean, I was there when those things were happening.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure,
so let's just be clear on the facts, right? The industry isn't actually protecting workers. And we have, you know, climate advocates have been calling for a just transition, which means ensuring that there are protections for workers as we move through these transitions. And not for anything, but switching off of gas into thermal heat networks requires, for example, a huge amount of plumbing. Every plumber's union should be in favor of this transition. There would be so much work to repipe, to create new infrastructure, to move heat. It's just false that we can't, you know, this idea that we're not going to have jobs. We're going to create jobs in this transition, and we're going to need more infrastructure, both to dismantle the stuff that's there and to put the new stuff in place. And it is unfortunate that there's been so much fear-mongering about the transition that workers, of course, are afraid for their own self-interest, and that we have not done a good enough job, both as an advocate community and also in the political world, to ensure that we reach out to those groups and bring them to the table and work with them to help them feel comfortable and understand that we need them. We need them more than ever. And electricians and plumbers should be all in on green energy.
Mark Dunley, do you share a concern that the governor, being from Buffalo, might be behind her the way she has dealt with the New York HEAT Act?
Well, I actually was at the Chautauqua Institute this summer, so I actually believe she comes from Hamburg, not Buffalo.
Oh, it's the she claims a Buffalonian. That's okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. But I certainly agree with Sue about the concept of just transition. And also one of the realities already, we have created far more jobs in the renewable energy industry than we have in the fossil fuel industry. We do have to worry about raising wages and some of the renewable energy industry. And I will note that both Sue and I were actually supportive of a climate law that was considerably stronger than what was passed by the CLCPA, which largely actually took an executive order that my wife had helped write when she was Secretary to Governor under Patterson back in 2009, and took it from executive order and put it into law. One of the things that climate groups added to that 2009 executive order was some labor standards. And unfortunately, that was one of the things that Governor Cuomo stripped out before he allowed the pass. One of the things the stronger law that Sue and I had worked on actually would have guaranteed any worker in the fossil fuel industry that lost their employment, that they would have their existing salary and benefits guaranteed for at least 5 years. But a just transition is something that people are very, very much focused upon from the climate advocacy community. It is, you know, something that was addressed, not as strong as we would like, in this scoping document that the Climate Action Council, you know, took, you know, 3 years to develop. And the other thing we did in terms of just transition is not only are we trying to protect workers, but we're also trying to protect communities, because not a lot, but the communities that have a fossil fuel plant in it, you know, have become pretty reliant upon that particular company to, you know, to pay for property taxes, for local services, and for schools. And so if those fossil fuel plants are, you know, down, we had pushed that there be a fund set up to, you know, help transition, wean off these local governments from those fossil fuel plants. But one of the big concerns about the transition to a clean energy future is that we don't have enough workers to actually accomplish that. And that's one of the reasons why the, you know, climate change groups have been really pushing the state with a fair amount of success to invest much more into worker training, starting at like the community college level and the BOCES programs to begin to help train more workers. And Sue is actually correct. You know, thermal energy networks or geothermal, I really think is one of the wave of the future. And that's going to create a lot of jobs. But I also think the governors in general, politicians in general, not just Governor Hochul, are much better about articulating goals and press releases than they are accomplishing it. And I remember in 2002, Governor Pataki set a goal in New York State to increase the amount of electricity we're getting from renewable energy to 30% by 2015. We're still short of that, you know, in 2024, and we started off, you know, in the mid 20s, mainly because of the hydroelectric that was built out in the Niagara River as part of the Frank FDR's New Deal. So we have to, you know, really push these politicians to, you know, it's one thing to hold a press conference and announce that we're going to do these really good things. It's another thing to really stand up to the interest that say, well, that may cut my profit margin. I don't want you to do that and actually deliver on the promises. And we need Governor Hochul to recognize we're really in a climate emergency. This is not just a matter of snapping your fingers and we're going to transition to a clean energy future. There's a lot of challenges ahead of us, both politically, economically, and technologically. And it needs to be an all hands on board in terms of the Hochul administration. And we're far from that situation at the moment.
One of my first jobs when I moved to Western New York, when I moved to Rochester, one of my first reporting jobs was to cover the opening of a new corn-based ethanol plant that Governor Pataki was there for the ribbon cutting. And boy, there was a lot of talk in the Pataki administration about how great corn-based ethanol was. And then that support basically fell off a cliff. And I remember asking someone in politics what happened. And they said, well, Pataki is not running for president anymore. And I said, what are you talking about? And they said, well, where's corn-based ethanol going to be very popular? Iowa. Who votes first? Yeah. Iowa. I'm going, wow.
That was a big theme in West Wing when they had you know, Matt versus Alan Alda. You know,
oh, man. Aaron Sorkin was writing Pataki's life at the time. Anyway, I bring this up because, the question is, you can talk a good game. What is your action? And then what does your action indicate here? Now, I want to read a couple of quick comments from listeners, and we'll get our guests to respond. In our second half hour, we're going to work a lot more through this report card, but I want to cover a couple of themes that listeners are bringing up first. Charles writes to say, "We're out of time, say the people who don't want nuclear power or methane capture or getting tough on China. Read that in a mocking voice, please. If we're out of time, nothing should be off the table, and yet apparently there are things like nuclear that are off the table." That is from Charles. All right, Susan Hugh Smith. Charles wanted me to read that in a mocking voice because he thinks it's crazy that nuclear is not on the table here. Should we be doing more nuclear?
So, let me put it this way. I am not anti-nuclear. It has been long been my position that we should not close any nuclear facilities until we have squeezed the last drop of fossil fuels out of our economy. Which is not the same thing as saying, well, let's go just expand all the nuclear we can. So what we've done in New York State, because it was politically expedient for Cuomo to close Indian Point, is he actually caused an increase in the amount of electricity that's being generated out of the state from natural gas plants, from peaker plants, because he closed Indian Point. So that was a mistake. I thought it was a mistake at the time. Nobody asked me. I still think, as I say, we need to keep our nuclear facilities running until we squeeze the last drop of fossil fuels out of the system. Then I'm willing to have any conversation about, what do we need moving forward? But nuclear is very expensive to build, and it takes a really long time. And we have other technologies that are cheaper, faster to build, should be easier to deploy, that we should be focusing on building those out first.
Mark Dunley, what do you think?
Well, I certainly agree there's a difference between the issue of shutting down existing nuclear power plants and building new ones. I will say, when I helped start NYPERG back in 1973, one of our first issues was trying to stop nuclear power plants. So it's been a 50-year issue, and frankly, all the issues that are being raised at this moment are the same arguments we had 50 years ago. The problem with building new nuclear power plants is the length of time it takes to build them. It's not going to be sufficient to deal with the immediate climate crisis at hand. They are terribly expensive. Nor is it true that particularly new nuclear power plants are carbon-free. The amount of carbon that goes into the construction of the facilities, particularly with cement, which is one of the largest sources of greenhouse gas emissions on the entire planet, something like 7 or 8%, is pretty significant. And then the whole problem of the mining of the uranium, and particularly its impact upon indigenous nations such as Onondaga Nation around Syracuse. I know I've been quite outspoken about it. And then the little problem that somewhere between 100,000 or more years, we have to figure out how to actually store, this particular waste. And it was interesting that Andrew Cuomo hired Emory Lovins from the Rocky Mountain Institute to help him with what was called Reform Energy Vision a number of years ago. And Emory Lovins from the Rocky Mountain Institute was one of the people who really said the biggest solution here is energy conservation, energy efficiency. It's the fastest, it is the cheapest, it is the most cost effective. And for some reason, Emory Lovins' contract was not renewed. And the governor, spent $7.6 billion of our customer money basically subsidizing three upstate nuclear power plants because it represented about 1,000 jobs. I think for $7.6 billion, we're going to come up with better ways to both keep 1,000 jobs, but also to reduce our greenhouse, gas emissions. And unfortunately, there's a lot of false climate solutions, carbon capture being another one. A lot of these solutions are being put forth by industry salesmen as a way to basically allow the fossil fuel industry to continue to move forward and make an enormous amount of money. I mean, just running fossil fuel plants costs New York State residents about $50 billion. That's what it'd be. $50 billion a year, just an increased healthcare cost. That's a lot of money.
Bill from Caledonia writes in to say, Could your guest please give us a comparison of New York State versus other states' climate scores? Remember that the governor needs the support of the representatives to make a difference in these matters. So, Bill, if listeners are just joining us, Bill is referring to the new report card for Governor Kathy Hochul, in which, according to an organization called Climate Can't Wait, the governor gets a failing D- on climate. Her top score in 14 different grading categories was a C. So Bill in Caledonia is saying, hey, well, how does that compare to other states? And keep in mind, she can't do everything alone here, Mark Dunley.
Well, let's look at another sort of, you know, radical environmental state, the state of Texas. Texas is so far ahead of New York State on renewable energy. In fact, it's ahead of the entire country. And two things is developing. One, it is developing wind. And one of the real failures of New York State has been its slow development of wind, particularly offshore wind. The one of the best places, if not the best place in the world for offshore wind is off of Long Island in New York City. And that's perfect because it's so close to New York City. The transmission lines to be constructed are relatively, you know, short. And one of the beautiful things about wind is that offshore wind in particular tends to blow at night. So you can partner offshore wind with solar during the day, then storage and offshore wind at night. And New York still, maybe we have one small 5 turbines, you know, built. So that's been a real thing. And the other thing, which I was surprised to see Texas really leading on, is geothermal. I happen to think, you know, like Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate was told, plastics is the future. I think geothermal is the future. And Texas has really put a lot of resources into geothermal. And what surprised me is not only are they using geothermal for heating and cooling, which is what a lot of us have been proposing, for instance, to use geothermal to heat and cool the state capitol building. But they're also using it for electricity, which surprised me. So, you know, New York can look good in some comparison to some other states, but I always remind people, you got to look at per capita rather than gross, because with New York being the third or fourth largest, you know, population-wise, we should have the third or fourth largest amount of renewable electricity, and that's not the case. And when we begin to look at per capita, then we fall much more towards the middle of the pack.
Bill, thank you. And then related to that, John says, a D minus for the governor. I'm sure Trump would get an F, but no one would believe these two politicians are anything close to each other on climate. That is from John. Okay, so part of, I think, John's complaint here is, if you're going to give Governor Hochul such a bad grade, does it make people think that nothing matters? I do think that John's probably correct. Well, in a moment, we'll ask Mark and Susan Hugh Smith if they would give Donald Trump an F on climate. But before we even do that, let's listen to two things that Donald Trump said just this weekend about climate change. The first, he said a series of things that are not true on the Joe Rogan Experience about whales dying from windmills and why windmills should be stopped. We should not be building windmills. We should not be doing offshore. And that there's all of these crazy things. Let's listen to Trump on whales.
How about in New Jersey, off the coast of New Jersey, they want to build. The people are going crazy not to build them. But where you have them, the whales are washing up on shore.
Right.
So in 50 years, they had one whale come ashore. Now they had like 18 come in the last year.
What is happening with the whales? I've read about this.
Well, they say that the wind drives them crazy. You know, it's a vibration because you have those. You know,
right.
Those things are 50-story buildings, some of them.
Right, and they're
50.
Super sensitive to vibrations.
Yeah, they have
and
those.
Sounds.
They, you know, the wind is rushing, the things are blowing. It's a vibration and it makes noise. You know what it is? I want to be a whale psychiatrist. It drives the whales freaking crazy.
I like this idea that Joe Rogan's like, oh, interesting. Yes, what is it, Dr. Trump, that's killing these whales? Scientific American has a long report on this. It is not the windmills. There's no evidence at all for that. But Trump wants to stop all wind energy to protect whales and make us believe that he cares about whales. Now, let's listen to Trump making claims about, he says, New York wants to make it so that any new build in the future, you can't build any more windows. No more windows on houses, apartments, or office buildings. Let's listen.
They want buildings in New York taken down and rebuilt without windows, because a window is environmentally unfriendly. I guess the sun goes through and creates a little warm feel. I like nice and warm. Oh, so beautiful. I want a window in my apartment. Oh.
Okay. Also, there is not any indication that there is a movement towards windowless New York, city or state, that I am aware of at all. So let me start with you, Mark Dunley. Two clips here, and John, who emailed to say, hey, if you're giving Kathy Hochul a D-, you'd probably give Trump an F. How could you possibly compare the two of them? Listen to those clips. What do you think, Mark?
Well, Hochul isn't running against Donald Trump, at least last week.
It's heard. True.
But yes, I don't think there's a climate group in the United States or on the planet who wants to see Donald Trump become president. He's absolutely terrible on it. I will note, however, that he's getting pushback from the fossil fuel industry over his attacks on the Inflation Reduction Act, which I think is way too little. But the fossil fuel industry, it was a Wall Street Journal article that said the fossil fuel industry has been reaching out to the Trump administration and said, please stop attacking the IRA. It gives us so much money for various false climate solutions, starting with carbon capture. That we love it. But yes, climate activists lay awake late at night worrying what will happen, you know, to the planet if Trump is elected president. To be honest, some of us also wake up late at night worrying what's going to happen if Harris becomes president, because she has reverted to this, all the above energy strategy that Obama had pushed. And I was bragging that under Biden, you know, the United States is now the largest producer on the planet of both oil and gas, and reverse their position on the Green New Deal and fracking. But any climate group that's made an endorsement so far in this election, has done it for Harris.
But Mark, briefly, is there any plan to take away my windows?
No.
I'm looking out the window right now.
And I'll just say with the whales, I mean, the reality is that environmental things like renewable energy also have environmental impact. And so you do have to pay attention to that. And so people have been very cautious about when they're putting wind turbines together to make sure that they're not siting it in the middle of the whale's migration path. And it's the same thing with, you know, turbines. Some of the initial wind turbines that were built out in California, unfortunately, you know, were built in the flight path of some condors. And, you know, cars and cats and buildings kill a whole lot more birds than windmills do. But, you know, you need to look at the environmental impact of solar, wind, geothermal, and try to reduce the negative impact that's associated with basically everything you do.
Fair enough. Susan Hughes Smith, what would you say to John, who thinks that scoring Hochul, similar to how you would score someone like Trump, could maybe demean the grade or the rating here?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the perspective, right? I think it is important to always acknowledge what we are doing well. And, it's a nuanced conversation, right? So, for example, New York State has this goal of reducing emissions 40% by 2030. I mean, we're not going to hit that, but we need to, you know, accelerate our efforts, not be like, oh, we're not going to hit it. So, you know, maybe nature will negotiate with us. Nature isn't going to negotiate with us. Nature's never been negotiating with us. There are actual physical limits. And human society is either going to choose, and our leaders are either going to have the courage to say the things and do the things that need to be done in order for us to stabilize the climate, or we're going to continue to disintegrate it, and all the problems we have are going to become much worse. So, in 1990, for example, we have actually reduced carbon dioxide emissions by 20%. That's incredible, actually. And most of that has come from the electricity sector. But considering the growth in transportation, the growth in buildings, the fact that those have come down at all is, you know, that's important to acknowledge. However, we've only reduced our total emissions by 9%, because there have been some industrial uses of a very potent greenhouse gas, HFCs, that have increased. And so that's undone a lot of the progress we're making on carbon dioxide. We've also allowed there to be the removal of more of our trees. And so we've reduced removals of carbon dioxide by 13%. So you end up with a net reduction of only 9%. And that speaks to the grade for Governor Hochul, is that there's one person who is currently in charge in New York State. Like, we're lucky in Rochester. Like, all the New York state legislators came out in support of the New York Heat Act, for example. The Senate's passed it 2-3 times now. Assembly, we're still waiting. But Governor Hochul is the person who can direct the agencies to do their jobs. And some of the state agencies are not acknowledging the Climate Leadership and Protection Act. They're not incorporating those climate goals into their work. The Public Service Commission needs to have stronger leadership. They are acting too slowly. Regulations, according to our climate law, regulations were supposed to be in place as of January 1st of 2024. We don't have those. Well, who's responsible for that ultimately is Governor Hochul. And that's true at every level of government. The executive is in charge of the infrastructure, the agencies that implement our laws and our rules. And so ultimately, it's the executive that has to be held accountable. So, yeah, absolutely. I had great hope for Governor Hochul. I still hope she ends up being the climate champion that she promised to be. As a mom, as a grandmother, I know she wants to be. And I certainly hope she lives up to that. And she could start by getting the Climate Superfund bill to her desk that both the Senate and the Assembly have passed, and she could sign it into law. And that would create some revenue for climate action.
All right, a couple quick points here. You're a county legislator. Mm. Do you know any local laws proposed banning windows? Do you want to ban windows?
Yes, I do not want to ban windows. No. Nobody wants to ban windows.
Trump says Democrats want to ban windows. No, yeah. No banning of windows.
Well, you know, there are always people who are willing to lie in order to support their own ideology. And to me, it's a sad state for America and perhaps for Western civilization. Like, we're supposed to be data-driven based on science. And I will maintain being data-driven and based on science.
Well, and then the whole whale psychiatrist thing, I'm like, he's George Costanza. Like, we're going to elect George Costanza.
Well, hey, look, if he wants to protect the whales, let's please protect the whales. And let's start by, not having ultrasound, seafloor exploration by the fossil fuel industry, which is very disruptive.
But to Mark's point, Sue, mm-hmm. to Mark Dunley's point about the Harris campaign, mm-hmm. they have, Kamala Harris has absolutely backtracked on a number of what her stated goals were 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I suspect, and I think a lot of people would probably agree, that that was politically pragmatic, that mm-hmm. we're going to have one of the closest elections ever, maybe, probably. Who wins Pennsylvania probably wins the White House, although mm-hmm. not definitely. That's how important Pennsylvania is. And my best guess is she looked at Pennsylvania and said, if I talk about banning fracking, I'm not going to win the state. I can't. It's not popular in one of the most important bellwether states. What does that tell us about the climate movement right now? And if you want to win Pennsylvania in the future as a Democrat and you still want to get past fracking, what's the messaging have to be? What's the communication have to be? What's the plan have to be? How do you do that? How do you convince Pennsylvanians this is a good idea?
It's a fair question, and it's the ever promised, always problem with politicians, right? They always say, well, if I stand up for what I really believe in, I won't get elected, and then I won't be able to do anything. But if you're not doing anything, what was the point of getting elected? And I think we have a huge crisis of information, of real information and real data. There's a lot of hiding the reality of what's happening. There's, minimizing people's suffering under our current system. And we act like, there's an awful lot of propaganda about the current energy system meeting our needs, which just isn't really true. There's a lot of illness and a lot of death, and always has been with the fossil fuel-based economy. And an alternative would be better for most people. And I will always maintain that our job is to convince people, to help them to look at what could be and not abandon them in the transition to that better world. And that better world is going to be better for everybody.
I think. Mark, go ahead.
One point, actually, a slight majority of voters in Pennsylvania are opposed to fracking. So she's promoting the minority position in that state in order to help her electorally. And that is, of course, unfortunately, you know, the Democrats on the left believe that, you know, the liberals will never vote against her, the Democrats, regardless of how bad they go on their issues. And so they ignore, you know, most of the voters in order to try to attract what they view as more of the moderate, you know, Republicans. And I just think that's a bad strategy. This election is going to be won based on turning out your base, not convincing Republicans to vote for Democrats or Democrats to vote for Trump. And I think Harris has not done a good job in the last 2 weeks of really trying to focus on convincing her base, convincing young people, convincing climate activists, convincing people concerned about Palestine, convincing people, you know, concerned about the economy that she will deliver. She's focused on, you know, the fear of Trump, which is certainly understandable. I just hope that their ground game, you know, and turning out the vote is going to prevail. But, you know, and I think the climate, I've argued this with fellow, you know, 350.org groups around the country. I think we need to be more critical of Harris and the Democrats, that they can't pivot, because part of, as Sue says, we have to educate people as to why we need to stop fracking, why we need to stop the use of fossil fuels, and playing these political games to try to move 2 or 3 percentage points in the elections undercuts that public education, which is critical. And we're not going to solve the climate change if the country remains divided like it is at the moment. We have to really get a vast majority of Americans to understand that the future for their children, future for themselves, because extreme weather is so prevalent at the moment, depends on taking climate action, which is going to cost, you know, some money and some disruption. And trying to play to a particular election, you know, undercuts the long-term changes that are needed.
Yeah, and one other thing is, I just think it undercuts democracy itself. When you have people who run for office making promises, claiming to care about something, claiming to understand its importance, but then lack the willpower to follow through, what you do is you create cynical citizens. And that creates a vulnerability for us as a democracy. And that's deeply concerning to me. We have to have more people with more courage to do what is right. And it's always the right time to do what is right.
You want to add to that briefly, Mark?
I jumped out of my seat yesterday when saw Donald Trump say he, if elected president, was going to cut energy prices by 50%. Like, who in the world possibly believes that's even possible?
Well, I mean, 4 years ago, he said that if Biden was elected, we would have $8 a gallon gas. It's around $3.17 a gallon nationally. We'd have a Great Depression worse than the 1930s. Stock markets at all-time highs. We'd have unemployment double digits. It's nowhere close. I mean, he says a lot of things. I mean, I didn't hear the comment about cutting energy prices in half, but I wouldn't be surprised that he said it. Now, two other listener pieces of feedback will help guide us through the rest of this report card. I do want to get Robert in Fairport, who's been waiting as well. Hey, Robert, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Your guest, your main guest there is not from around here. He probably has never seen the large wind farm in Cohocton, New York. Every time I've passed this, and this is about an hour south of Rochester, about a third of the windmills aren't even moving. In some cases, they aren't moving at all. And given the amount of money that's going into this sort of thing, it just seems to me that it's crazy that we're investing in an intermittent energy source when we could be investing in nuclear power and things like that. I mean, that's part one. Part two is Susan Hughes works for a company called Rocktricity. She owns that company. They sell, services to government that should be disclosed in her biography for the show, because I think it's kind of a conflict of interest for somebody to come on the show on this topic and not disclose that. Thank you.
Robert, thank you. I drive that route on 390 all the time, coaching baseball in the Southern Tier. 15 games a year down there, past those windmills all the time. They are often moving, man. It's actually on a very banal drive. That's one of my favorite parts. I think it's actually quite beautiful. Hey, different strokes for different folks. Susan?
Yeah, I appreciate the note that, yes, I am a co-partner, managing partner in a company called Rocktricity. We are not currently active. So we have not been working for community choice aggregation programs for some time, and we have no active contracts, just to be clear.
You're not currently selling to governments, pitching to governments?
We're not selling anything to anybody right now.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Robert, thank you. Joe, so let me read Joe's email, and I want to ask Mark Dunley about this. So when I look at the report card from Climate Can't Wait for Governor Kathy Hochul, renewable energy targets, she gets a C-. And funding the transition to renewables, she gets an F. But Joe writes, Joe is a climate skeptic, and he says, people say what they want to get rid of fossil fuels. What is the alternative to meet our energy demands of today? You know, Mark, I remember a conversation probably the better part of a decade ago with astrophysicist Adam Frank, who said in 1890, you could have looked around and been like, gas stations? You think we're going to have just stations of gas? Where is it going to come from? How are we going to do that? That's crazy. Horse and buggy forever. Horse and buggy forever. And then 30 years later, we did. And he said that in many ways, it was celebrated as a great act of American innovation and determination. And that's okay. We didn't, in 1890 and 1900 and 1920 and 1940, we weren't really thinking too much about climate change. And it should be celebrated as a great feat of American achievement. So Adam Frank said on this program, why is it not the most pro-America thing you could say to say, you think we can't accomplish this? We do big things all the time. That is who we are. We do it in ways that make the planet better, that make families stronger, that can make communities better. And we don't live in the past forever. We go forward in ways that are incredible. We lead the world. That's who we are. And I'm listening to Joe's email, and so often in the political rhetoric, Mark Dunley, it's like, oh, you want to go away from fossil fuels? Well, this country is going to collapse. Why do you hate this country? And it's like the most can't do. It's like Eeyore just playing on a loop here. So do you want to talk a little bit about this? Because Joe doesn't believe that we can replace this kind of energy and we can do it economically feasibly, Mark.
You know, I wasn't around for that transition from the horse and buggy to the cars. But I was surprised to learn that milk took place within a 10-year period of time. So that was a really rapid transition once it started. And I used to make the analogy, I was living in Brooklyn for a while and riding those subways, and every nationality in these subways, and a lot of these grandmas and everybody on that subway, including the 80-year-old grandmas, all had smartphones. And, you know, how quickly, you know, that changed. And when I started working as a hunger, as an activist, we didn't have things like electric typewriters. I remember, you know, putting together newsletters where we had to do rub-on letters. And, you know, when I went to college at RPI, you know, you had to write your own computer program to do any type of computer things. And all we have is mainframes. Technology didn't change so quickly. In 2011, 2012, a whole bunch of professors, Mark Jacobson at Stanford University, Bob Howarth of Cornell, key member of the Climate Action Council, did a study showing how New York could meet 100% of its energy needs by 2030 with 100% wind, water, and solar. The technology exists to do this. It needs to be fine-tuned in certain ways. What is lacking is the political will. This is not a technological challenge. This is a political challenge. And if we don't do it, you know, There's a reason why, you know, scientists say that this is an existential threat to humanity, that human civilization as we presently know it may not be able to survive the type of level of global warming that we're doing. And I worry, you know, about, you know, what type of world I'm leaving for my children, and hopefully my grandchildren and my son will move along there. we're out of time, and there are solutions. And what if we're wrong? Oh, well, we'll create a society with lots of jobs. Where to run your electric systems will basically no money for the fuel because it's wind and solar, and it'll be a lot healthier. What's the downside of moving faster to 100% renewable energy? We know what the downside is of moving too slow. I don't see what the downside is of moving too quickly.
We're going to post this report card from Climate Can't Wait in the show notes for this program when it goes up as a podcast later today. Final thoughts here. We got 40 seconds left. Susan Hugh Smith, if the governor can improve her grade to an A or a B in any one or two categories in the next year, what do you hope it is?
Well, she immediately passes Climate Superfund bill, and she gets the New York HEAT Act done. We have to have it. It has to be done this year. Otherwise, you know, we're just throwing leaves in the wind. We need to be aligning our goals with our systems, and then allow the market and the structures of our systems to make that transition for us over time in an effective way.
Mark Dunley, we're going to hear the music, but give me one or two categories you desperately want to see the governor.
Climate Superfund, and the state says we need to raise $10 billion a year for this transition. They need to do that. They need to make their cap and trade program actually work.
Mark Dunley, representing Climate Can't Wait, among many other hats that he wears. Mark, thank you for making time for the program today.
Thank you, Evan.
Susan Hugh Smith, Monroe County Legislator, among many other hats as well, including a co-partnership in a company that's not really doing anything right now. But that's okay. Maybe sometime in the future.
Who knows?
Thank you for being here.
Thanks a lot, Evan.
And from all of us at Connections, thank you for listening. We will be back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.